Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Evergreen Elves by Danielle Garrett. Narrated by Amanda Ronconi. 1. Life is better with sprinkles, even in the North Pole. Now, in the suburb of Holiday Haven, those sprinkles tend to come atop a steaming mug of cocoa, served up by one of two fairies, Holly, or her sister, Ivy. The pair ran the Candy Cane Cafe, and while they had the tendency to dish out gossip and nonsense alongside their famous hot cocoa and scones, it was still one of my favorite places to visit whenever I came into town. It also made a good place for dates with Corbin Frost, my boyfriend of just about a year. Or at least it did any time other than November and December. The closer it got to Christmas, the crazier things got in the small town. I realized my mistake as soon as I opened the door of the small cafe.
"Afternoon, Lumi,"
Ivy exclaimed, her tiny voice barely audible over the hum of patrons' chatter. There were 2.5 weeks until Christmas, and Holiday Haven had turned into a full-blown tourist town once again. Magical beings came from all over the world to visit the North Pole and its surrounding suburbs this time of year. The tourists were the lifeblood for many of Holiday Haven's businesses, including my own family's. But it was still a little jarring to walk into normally peaceful shops and find them packed. I twinkled my fingers in Ivy's direction as I glanced around the shop, hoping to spot an unoccupied table. Corbin was supposed to meet me here in 15 minutes. But, considering the state of the place, I might need to take our usual order to go. The tiny fairies jingled as they swooped and dove through the air, whipping up drinks for the customers in line ahead of me. The scene would likely be daunting to even the most skilled of baristas. Luckily for Holly and Ivy, they had magic on their side. With a grin, Ivy sent a shower of fairy dust toward an insulated whipped cream canister. The silver cylinder floated off the counter, flipped upside down in midair, and dispensed a perfect dollop onto a pair of mugs. With another shot of her magic, she started foaming up some milk. Beside her, Holly had her own shower of magic sparkles wrapped around 3 cocoa mugs, filled to the brim with clouds of whipped cream. The mugs levitated off the counter and sailed through the crowded cafe, and landed without spilling so much as a drop, rousing a boisterous cheer from a table full of elves. With a grin, Holly spun around, her wings beating even faster as she sent another arc of magic to collect the dirty mugs left in a bin placed near the front door. She collected them and sent them whizzing to the kitchen. I smiled as I watched them work. It was almost like attending a concert of sorts, with each of them conducting their magic to help the other. Holly and Ivy could be a little spacey, but when it came to making cocoa, they were unmatched. Every so often, I checked over my shoulder, waiting for Corbin to come through the shop's front doors. A flutter of anticipation curled through my stomach when I heard the bell jingle, only for it to recede when I turned back and didn't see his wide smile.
"How's it going, Lumi?"
Holly asked, zipping near in a shower of fairy dust. She paused to wipe her brow with a pastel pink handkerchief.
"Is it just me, or are things busier than usual around here?"
"It's not just you," I replied. "We've had about 1.5 times the normal amount of visitors out at the sanctuary over the past week." Ivy buzzed by, offering a smile, before tossing handfuls of chocolate sprinkles onto a tray full of cocoa mugs.
"We can barely keep up around here," she said,
sending the tray floating across the room to a large group of customers who had pushed 2 tables together near the fireplace.
"I'm surprised you made it into town at all," Holly said.
"Oh, well, I have a dress fitting with Aunt Viv," I explained. Both fairies paused their work and swooned.
"Oh, yes, the Yule Ball," Ivy sighed. "What color is your gown this year?"
I smiled. Sometimes I thought I was the only woman in all of Holiday Haven who didn't like the annual gala. Even though I was no longer single, I would still prefer a night in front of a fire with a good book over getting glammed up for a flashy night out in the North Pole. "I'm not sure yet," I told the fairies. "I just told Aunt Viv I needed a dress." Holly and Ivy turned toward each other, their eyes wide.
When they glanced back at me, they wore identical expressions of skepticism.
But Lumi,
Ivy started,
it's a big night for you. I'm sure the paparazzi will be there to capture the whole thing.
Oh, no, Holly interrupted. Prince Corbin will shoo them away. Surely he won't allow them to intrude on such a special moment. I frowned. Right. Corbin was no more thrilled about the Yule Ball than I was. But as a royal prince and the second in line to the Frost Kingdom throne, he had to attend. Not to mention Jack would be there, and someone needed to keep him from getting into trouble. Still, I didn't need to tell Holly and Ivy Corbin's true thoughts on the event, nor my own, for that matter. It was best to smile and nod. If I'd learned anything about royal expectations in the year since meeting Corbin, it was that no comment was almost always the best policy. Speaking of Corbin, I said with a polite smile, he's on his way. So if I could get two Cocos to go, I would appreciate it. Holly and Ivy snapped back into action, their starry-eyed looks morphing back into focused concentration. Holly rang up the purchase, and I dropped all of the change into the candy cane-striped tip jar before shuffling to the other end of the counter to wait for Ivy to finish the drinks. It was too busy in the cafe. A walk through the town square sounded better anyway. Colder, to be sure, but I hadn't yet had time to visit the outdoor Christmas market, and I had about an hour before Aunt Vivian expected me at her dress shop, Silver and Gold Garments. I pulled off my gloves and retrieved my phone from the pocket of my thick winter coat, intending to text Corbin an update and get his ETA, when something caught the corner of my eye. A stack of magazines was piled off to one side of the bar, and the glossy cover of the one on top had a photo of Corbin's profile, walking down the sidewalk in front of a jewelry store window I didn't recognize. The headline at the top of the photo read, "A Royal Rift? Tired of waiting on permanent bachelor Jack Frost, Prince Corbin looks set to buck royal tradition and take a winter bride. Is Lumi Northrup in for a Yule Ball to remember? Details about the pending proposal inside." My breath caught in the back of my throat, and I looked up at the two fairies blitzing back and forth on the other side of the counter. So that's what they meant by it being a special night. They thought Corbin planned to propose at the Yule Ball. Oh, of all the ridiculous things, I muttered as I grabbed the magazine. I shoved it to the bottom of the stack. But a tendril of curiosity gave me pause. With a sigh, I dragged the magazine back out and flipped it open to the page number printed on the front cover. There were a series of photos showing Corbin entering the jewelry store, with the final one capturing him mid-stride as he left, a small gift bag in hand. My stomach flip-flopped, and I turned the page, only to find an advertisement for some kind of anti-wrinkle potion. With a scoff, I tossed the magazine back to the stack. So he went to a jewelry store a few weeks before Christmas. That didn't mean anything. Did it? Another quiver surged through me, and I about jumped out of my skin when Ivy called my name. Eyes wide, I turned to find the fairy extending a pair of travel cups toward me on a wave of fairy dust.
Is everything all right? She asked.
Mm-hmm. Perfectly. Thanks again. I snatched the drinks from mid-air and made my way back through the crowded shop as another cluster of patrons pushed inside. I was down to the dregs of my cocoa by the time Corbin called. I tossed the nearly empty cup into a trash bin near one of the Christmas market stalls, one selling an assortment of festive costumes for dogs. I briefly considered asking if they could make things rabbit-sized, but didn't think Sugar Plum would agree to wear a costume, even if they did. I couldn't blame him, but the idea of the Arctic hare in a hat with a pair of faux antlers was hard to resist. I accepted the call and pressed the phone to my ear. "Are you at the market?" I asked, already glancing around, expecting to see his head above the busy market. One perk of dating a tall guy, they were much easier to spot in a crowd.
"Market?" Corbin's deep, almost gruff voice replied. "You must not have seen my message." Frowning, I pulled the phone away long enough to glance at my notifications. Sure enough, there was a text from Corbin saying he wasn't able to meet me in time. "I'm just seeing it," I said, holding the phone back up to my ear.
"I'm really sorry, Lumi. You have no idea how much I wanted to see you today. It's been too long."
I smiled sadly at his pained tone. "I miss you too. What's Jack up to this time? Did he finally manage to break his leg doing his Frost Core?" The Frost King had recently taken up his own version of parkour, using his ice magic to make his stunts bigger and more dangerous as he raced around the course he'd created in one of the castle's courtyards. Almost a year had passed since Jack ascended to the throne, but he hadn't fully settled into his regal role. Corbin had put a stop to some of Jack's antics, but he'd allowed the so-called Frost Core to continue, declaring it an outlet for his older brother's pent-up energy.
"No," Corbin said with a sigh, clearly not amused. "He's actually been in meetings most of the day."
My brow arched. "Did you duct tape him to a chair?" That drew a soft chuckle, and my heart swelled.
"No need in this case. He's voluntarily been showing up every day this week. On time, even. The zoning committee has been meeting to discuss some potential changes to the downtown area, and it turns out Jack has a lot of opinions on where the new road should go. I guess all that time spent on his snowmobile might come in handy."
I laughed. "Who knew?" I expected him to join in my laughter, but there was a pause on the other end of the line as muffled voices spoke in the background. I heard a door close and could imagine Corbin stealing away to a private room in the expansive castle made of ice.
"Sorry about that," he said, his voice strong again. "It's hectic here. What time is your appointment this afternoon?"
I glanced at the time on my phone before answering. "Aunt Viv is expecting me at 2.
"And afterward?"
"I should get back home. We have the big sponsor appreciation banquet on Saturday. It's been so busy all week, we're behind on some of the prep for the party. It's going to be all hands on deck to get everything set up on time." My heart sank as the possibility of seeing Corbin drifted further away.
"Right, of course."
Corbin made a frustrated sound in his throat.
"Jack is booked up with more meetings tomorrow. While he's occupied, I was planning to meet with the Royal Council to finalize some details for the summit next month."
"Well, you'll be at the sanctuary this weekend, right?" I asked.
"That's the plan," Corbin replied. "If I can get all of this squared away over the next few days, I promise I'll be all yours this weekend. I'll even muck stalls."
I laughed. "Now that would get the tabloids talking." For a minute, I considered telling him about the article I'd seen in the Evergreen Inquirer, but stopped short. I was sure it was nothing more than a cooked-up story to sell magazines. For all I knew, Corbin was at that jewelry store to pick up something for himself. And even if it was something meant for me, that didn't mean it was an engagement ring. Then again, buying me any kind of jewelry would be an odd gift, considering I spent most of my days covered in mud and hay. I doubted Sugar Plum or the reindeers would be too impressed by a diamond bracelet. The Frost Pixies probably would, but then I'd have to fight them off to keep them from carrying it to one of their hollows to use as some kind of pixie-sized disco ball.
"I should get going," Corbin said, pulling me from my thoughts. "I'm sorry about today. I promise I'll make it up to you."
"It's okay, really. I'll see you this weekend."
"I can't wait."
We hung up the phone, and I took another lap around the market, finishing off the cocoa I'd purchased for Corbin, seeing as he wouldn't be needing it. I took my time, stopping at most of the booths, even though they didn't change much from year to year. I knew most of the vendors and struck up casual conversation when I could, but the market was bustling with busy shoppers, and there wasn't always time to do more than offer a smile or wave as I passed from booth to booth. Even though I lived in a place steeped in holiday tradition, this time of year always felt special to me. The market was filled with familiar sights and smells that made it officially feel like Christmas. The garlands and twinkling lights, the poinsettias and decorated trees, the spiced cider and roasted chestnuts and kettle corn. I couldn't help but let myself get lost in the wonder of it, And hey, if that meant getting a jump on my holiday shopping, so be it. With the second cocoa finished and a few small gifts purchased, I dragged myself from the market and made my way to Silver and Gold Garments. It wasn't too far from the town square, so I opted to walk rather than try to flag down a passing snowmobile taxi for a ride. It was odd being in town without Starly, but she'd been commissioned to give little flying reindeer rides to some of the children visiting the sanctuary. She was by far one of the most docile reindeer, and a good size for smaller children. She didn't seem to mind the extra attention and candy canes either. My mom had dropped me off on her way to the pole to have lunch with my younger brother, Klein. He lived and worked in the pole, and he treated mom to lunch and a manicure every few weeks. Klein and mom were two peas in a pod. They were more comfortable at brunch or in a salon than in a barn. My older brother, Stephen, fell somewhere in between. He didn't mind getting his hands dirty, but I knew he didn't see himself taking over operations of the reindeer sanctuary when mom and dad passed on. He lived in a cottage on the property, but his life was busy as a single father. He shared custody with his ex-wife, Nicole, and held down a full-time job off the farm. Neither of my parents had asked me what my plans were long-term. Until recently, I hadn't given them much of a reason to wonder. The sanctuary was my life, and I wanted to keep it that way. I rose early to tend to the animals, looked after the frost pixies, and helped coordinate visitor events when the holiday season began. I could do it all. I knew the practical and business sides inside and out, and couldn't imagine my life any other way. At least, not until I'd met Corbin. I certainly never expected to fall in love with a prince. Not even as a young girl had I ever dreamed of becoming a princess. I'd been too busy learning to ride horses and care for the other animals that lived in the frozen woods surrounding my childhood home. I was happiest with the wind blowing through my hair, a pair of work gloves on my hands, not at some stuffy soiree with foreign ambassadors. My idea of a perfect gift was a pair of new waterproof coveralls or an electric hand warmer. Not diamond bracelets or fancy carriages. Corbin was wonderful, and I didn't want to lose him. But lately, my mind had taken to wandering. In the quiet moments spent alone in the barn late at night, or flying over the Pixie Hollow, I wondered where any of this was heading. I didn't want to give up my way of life, and Corbin couldn't opt out of his. We ran on parallel tracks, intersecting for a moment, only to be pulled apart again. It seemed only a matter of time before those tracks diverged for good, regardless of what the tabloids proclaimed. As I stepped inside my aunt's boutique, I couldn't help but think that this year's Yule Ball might not be the beginning of something new, but rather, the end. 2. A sparrow-sized fairy darted past as I closed the shop's door behind me. "Lumi," the fairy chirped, a blur of fairy dust and a shock of green hair. "You're early." "Is that okay? I was getting chilly outside," I asked, already halfway out of my gloves. Aunt Viv's shop was small, and there was already a customer inside at the trifold mirror. The woman was statuesque, with waist-length raven curls, wearing a stunning gown in a merlot color. A fairy with periwinkle hair and a splash of blue freckles across her tiny nose surged above the woman's head, showering her with blue fairy dust.
"Of course it's okay, Lumi. Sterling is just being a stress case, as usual."
Sterling, the green-haired male fairy, shot his coworker a scowl before darting off to retrieve a spool of thread from a meticulously organized box on the counter.
"Watch your tongue, Winterbell. For all you know, I pulled your name in the Secret Santa drawing."
Winterbell giggled and fluttered around to take in her handiwork on the gown modeled by the dark-haired woman.
"I think we're all set, Sherry. Let's get you out of this. We'll finish up these last alterations and have you all set for the ball."
The woman nodded and carefully made her way behind the curtain to the small dressing room area. With her client busy, Winterbell zipped back across the shop and hovered in midair behind the counter. She gestured at a tray of artfully decorated sugar cookies.
Would you like one? Pearl Markham dropped them off earlier today. We're having a little trouble getting rid of them. Everyone is too worried about fitting into their Yule ball gowns.
I smiled. No, thank you. I'm already risking a cocoa sugar rush.
There's never a shortage of treats this time of year,
Winterbell agreed. We aren't quite finished with your gown, Sterling interjected as he fluttered over to join us. He glanced down at the cookies, ran a hand over his midsection, then shook his head and diverted his attention. Vivian wanted to see it on you once more before she had us finish the hemline and sleeves. No problem, I replied. We still have a couple of weeks to go. What about Prince Corvin? Do you know where he is getting his suit from? Perhaps we can send a coordinating handkerchief or necktie, Sterling suggested. I'm not really sure. I think he'll probably just pick something from his closet. Winterbell sighed dreamily.
I'll bet he has an amazing closet.
I smiled politely. He does have quite the collection, but a pocket square isn't a bad idea.
Excellent, Sterling replied. It's bound to be a special night. We'll want to see to every detail.
Winterbell slid Sterling a sideways smile. Sterling puffed out his chest and flapped his wings.
Lumi, I'm not ordinarily one to participate in town gossip. I find the whole idea rather tawdry, truth be told, but there is something you should know.
I had a feeling I knew where this was headed. With a soft smile, I held up a hand, stopping the fairy short. If this is about the article in the Evergreen Inquirer, I already know. And while I appreciate the heads up, I really don't think there's anything to get worked up about. It's just silly rumors. Winterbell's tiny brow furrowed.
Are you sure, Lumi?
Nodding, I peeked past them. Where is Aunt Viv? Before either Sterling or Winterbell could answer, the curtain at the other end of the counter parted and Vivian Lamont appeared, one arm wrapped around the shoulders of the dark-haired woman.
I'm so glad you like it. It might be my new favorite,
Aunt Viv told her. Technically speaking, Vivian and I weren't related. She and my mom were long-term friends, and my brothers and I grew up calling her Aunt Viv. Her warm brown skin was flawless, with only the softest of smile lines to hint at her age. She preferred a natural makeup look, all except for her lips. I was convinced she slept in her bold and bright lipstick. Aunt Viv tossed me a wink as she finished saying goodbye to her client. As soon as the woman left the shop, Aunt Viv rushed over and embraced me.
Lumi, dear, it's so good to see you.
Smiling into her shoulder, I squeezed her back. How are you? Mom said you were traveling all summer. Paris, New York, Berlin. It all sounded so exciting. Aunt Viv stepped back, still holding me by the shoulders for another moment.
Oh, yes, it was a whirlwind. But you know me. I'm happiest when I get to come back home to Holiday Haven.
She laughed and let me go.
Come, come. Let's get you into your dress. I know you're short on time. Where's that handsome prince of yours?
Sterling and Winterbell buzzed into the back room, leaving me alone with Aunt Viv, though I had the feeling they were both keeping one ear cocked to overhear my reply. He's at the castle, busy, as always. I tried to smile, but it felt a little thin. Aunt Viv bustled around the small seating area surrounding the mirrors and platform. She fluffed a pillow and plucked an empty champagne flute from the small glass table between the love seat and high-back upholstered chair.
Did Sterling talk to you about the option to add a handkerchief or tie to your order?
Yes, I replied. Sounds like a good idea to me. Turning, Aunt Viv smiled.
Good. And of course I'll need pictures.
I laughed. Why is this giving me flashbacks to prom night? Aunt Viv laughed, the sound warm and honeyed.
If I recall correctly, I didn't get any photos from that night either. Something about you staying home to take care of a sick reindeer?
I quirked my lips to one side, surprised she remembered. I guess I do kind of owe you then, huh? Aunt Viv deposited the flute on the counter and then took her place in the center of the small viewing area.
You know I think of you as my own daughter, Lumi. I'd love nothing more than to have some photos of you and your handsome prince to put on my mantle.
Sterling and Winterbell flew back into the room, a garment bag floating between them on a typhoon of fairy dust. Aunt Viv grabbed the hanger and placed it on a peg beside the mirrors. She removed the gown from the bag and held it out for me to inspect. It was a rich emerald green with a princess neckline, a detail not lost on me, and off the shoulder sleeves that left the majority of my arms bare.
There will be gloves, of course, Aunt Viv added. A tiara, too. Should you want to lean into the theme?
I smiled. I think we can skip that part. The gloves sound nice, though. Winterbell flew off to one side of the shop and returned with a pair of velvet black gloves that would go up just past my elbows. With my general stamp of approval given, I was ushered into a dressing room where I slipped on the dress before returning to the front of the shop for Aunt Viv's careful inspection. Sterling placed pins along the hem, neckline, and waist, as Aunt Viv made verbal notes. When she was satisfied, I changed back into my winter clothes and prepared to leave. Before I could say goodbye, Aunt Viv gave me a knowing glance.
I know you're busy, Lumi, but if you have a little extra time, perhaps we should start talking about wedding gown designs. I could open a bottle of champagne. We really should get to it sooner rather than later. You have no idea how long it takes Chantilly Lace to get here.
Behind her, the pair of fairies were practically vibrating in anticipation. Aunt Viv, I all but groaned. Don't tell me you believe the gossip rags, too. Aunt Viv cocked one dark brow at me as she planted a fist on her ample hip.
Oh, come on, Lumi. Everyone who knows anything about the Frost family knows that Corbin isn't the playboy type. It's been a year. Why wouldn't he propose? It makes perfect sense. Even without seeing those juicy photos of him at that posh-looking jewelry store.
Slowly, I backed away toward the door. I promise you'll be the first to know, but let's put a pin in the wedding plans for now. But Lumi, bye Aunt Viv, gotta run. The North Star Reindeer Sanctuary was bustling with activity when I returned home via a snowmobile taxi service. Mom was still in the North Pole with Klein, so I'd opted to get my own ride home. With my dress sorted, I could return to work. And there was always plenty of it. As I made my way up the driveway to the main house, I realized one of the snowmobiles parked out front belonged to Doc Patches, the North Pole's lead veterinarian and personal vet to all of the reindeer and other creatures who called the sanctuary home. My pulse spiked as I hurried toward the largest barn. We didn't have any scheduled visits with Doc Patches. Had one of the reindeer gotten sick or hurt? Worry roiled through me in waves as I broke into a run. I heard Doc Patch's voice coming from the barn as I threw open the gate to the pasture. One barn door was open, and I could see the lanky elf standing with my dad near Starly's stall. My heart plummeted into my stomach as I rushed inside. "Is she okay?" I exclaimed. Both Dad and Doc Patches turned at my entrance, and Starly's white nose poked over the side of her stall, sniffing the air to see if I'd brought any treats back for her.
Lumi, there you are, Dad said. I was just about to offer Doc Patches some cocoa while we waited for you.
I frowned. Did I mix up one of our appointments? I was usually so on top of things around the farm, but then things had been more frenzied than usual. It was possible something had slipped my mind.
Not at all, Lumi dear,
Doc Patches replied, his kindly eyes peering at me from above a pair of half-moon spectacles. I had no idea how old Doc Patches was, but he and Santa Claus, or Chris, as he called him, were rumored to be lifelong friends, and Santa was close to immortal, as I understood it. He stood half a head taller than my dad, who stood about 6 feet, with a wiry frame that moved with a grace that belied his advanced years.
I'm afraid I need your assistance. Do you have a few moments?
I glanced at my dad. He offered a slight shrug.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?